If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 284, entitled How to Express Your Desires, Tap Into Your Emotions, and Overcome Your Deepest Fears, I chat with Dr. Michael Pariser. Dr. Michael Pariser is a psychotherapist in West Los Angeles specializing in the treatment of emotional disorders and the author of the new book, No More Mr. Nice Guy, The Hero's Journey, A Step-by-Step Guide to Becoming an Integrated Male. In today's episode, Dr. Pariser talks about nice guy syndrome and breaking past this to reveal your true desires and needs as a man. He also dives into many psychological techniques and practices for reconditioning your mindset for happiness and success despite past traumas or maladaptive traits. If you're wondering how to express your desires, tap into your emotions, and overcome your fears, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Listen, guys, here's the God's honest truth. We're living in a chaotic time. You already know this. However, what you may not already know is that we're also living in a censorship time. A lot of good information is being suppressed. A lot of good information is being censored. You can look no further than the podcast episode we dropped several weeks back about the COVID-19 pandemic. That podcast episode was actually taken down in Spotify and a number of other platforms because they didn't like the information that we were talking about. Now, we only cover fair and balanced information on this show and try to give you a good holistic perspective on helping yourself, helping your family, and helping your loved ones. But for some reason, that information just doesn't align with some of the mainstream authorities out there who don't like that type of information. They don't like for you to be in charge of your health. They don't like for you to be in charge of your family's health. And for whatever reason, they try to suppress it. Now, I'm all about being an open book. I'm all about being fair, and I'm all about hearing all sides of a solution to a potential problem. But what I do hate most in life is being censored and having my opinion censored when I know I'm being fair and balanced. And that is one thing that honestly pisses me off, probably more than anything. And so with that information, I want you guys to sign up for the email list if you haven't done that. Make sure you go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter and sign up today, because no matter who censors us, all the information that you need is always going to be delivered through the email. We're always going to get the information, all the podcasts out to you. So if one platform goes down, we're always going to have the main platform at Elite Man Magazine. We're going to have the links to give you the episodes that you need. EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter is the number one place to sign up today, so you don't miss any of our episodes going forward. If they try to pull us down again, I guarantee you we will come back up and we will have those episodes ready for you. You may have even missed that original episode on COVID-19 if you listen to, say, Spotify or another platform that got taken down. But whatever the case, make sure you sign up for the newsletter so you don't miss anything else. Whether that's our YouTube videos, whether that's our podcasts, whether that's articles, whatever else, whatever information that you need will be delivered to you in your email address when you sign up for the Elite Man newsletter. So make sure you sign up for that now. Also, on that same token, you might as well follow us across the board. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube if you haven't done that yet. Follow me on Instagram at Justin Stenstrom if you haven't done that yet. Follow me on Facebook at Justin Stenstrom if you haven't done that yet. And join the Facebook group as well, the Elite Man Mastermind, if you haven't done that yet. Follow us across the board on all things, because one platform may take us down, but another platform is definitely going to have us. And if all the platforms decide to come together one day and ban all of our content, guess what? We're still going to find a way to get you that information that you need. The best way to get that information, though, is to join the newsletter, elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter today. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from Elite Man Magazine, and my guest today is Dr. Michael Pariser from drparisertherapy.com. Michael, thanks so much for coming to the show, man.
Hey, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I know you're a friend of and also a mentee and slash Dr. Glover is your mentor of sorts in the nice guy world. And we've had Dr. Glover on the show, I believe, a couple times now in the past. He's an incredible guy. Talks about some really powerful, profound topics for men especially. And that's kind of your alleyway as well, too. Like, you're a therapist by trade, but do you always work with just men, or have you in the past historically worked with just men?
No, I started out as a regular therapist, just like everybody else, and I treated whoever walked in the door and was willing to pay me.
What's your background in therapy like? What's some of your training and teaching there?
I started out, well, I guess what I would say is that what I focus on are deeper emotional issues. So I started out doing kind of psychodynamic work and then increased the intensity when I studied contemporary psychoanalysis, which is a kind of a form of psychotherapy that focuses on emotions, particularly unbearable, unsayable, difficult, and uncomfortable emotions, and bringing them out and allowing them to become kind of part of who you are.
Yeah. So at what point did you kind of shift to start to working primarily or mostly with men, and how has that been?
It's been a shift because it's been a kind of a profound shift for me because it went along with my own journey of self-discovery and my own journey of psychological growth and change. I originally bought the book No More Mr. Nice Guy because I personally was struggling with a bunch of issues, and I was in therapy and it seemed like I had a million issues. And then I read No More Mr. Nice Guy, and all of the issues, instead of a whole lot of little issues, I had one big issue. And it helped me make sense out of what was going on and focus on things differently. And that enabled me to kind of move more into the heart of the problem. And when I started working on that, I then started a group. I started a workshop. I started working with more men directly, working on the kinds of issues that I personally was working on. And then that kind of the word got out, and I did training with Dr. Glover, and people came through his website, and suddenly I found myself dealing with a whole lot of guys rather than a mixed practice.
Nice. That's a pretty cool story, man. What was the major issue? You said you had you thought you had a bunch of little issues going on, but it was really one big major issue. I can kind of assume what that was, but can you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah. The big issue as a nice guy is that I believe that if I'm nice, I'm good, I put other people's needs first, hide my own, and try and make other people happy, especially women, that I'm going to get the love that I'm looking for and live basically a problem-free existence, get everything that I want without even having to ask for it. And that's these are fundamental delusions, but they operate as principles for all nice guys, and they did for me too. And so I had to kind of get to a place where I could break out of that way of seeing things and start to experience myself as a human being with wants and needs and flaws and limitations, as well as good generous qualities. I had all qualities, and begin to accept myself in all aspects of my being. And that was the work that I had to do, and that was the struggle that I engaged in.
So when you're going through some of this work yourself and then, you know, starting to get past it, what are some of the exercises or activities or action things that you're doing to make sure you get past that that syndrome, the nice guy syndrome there that kind of keeps you down and had kept you down for, you know, an extended period of time like that?
Well, that's a good question. It turns out I just wrote a book with 13 chapters full of those exercises. So I have to say, for people listening out there, they're all in there. If I could pick one or two that are the most important, it would be, first off, a kind of a body scan to help guys get out of their heads and into their body. So it helped me to get out of my head, get into my body, identify, feel the sensations, and begin to associate those sensations with specific emotions, and then be able to identify the emotions and the information they carry and use them in real life. So that's pretty abstract, but I'll see if I can give you an example. If I'm in a relationship with a woman and I don't like something, I find myself with a feeling kind of resentful and frustrated, and I don't know what's going on, and I do a body scan, probably one of the first things that's going to come up is a sense of queasiness in my stomach and a tightness in my chest, which I identify with anxiety or fear. And so that tells me that I'm scared to talk to her about what's bothering me. And then I might also pick up a tightness in my fists and a hunched shoulder and a narrowed eyes and a set jaw that tells me that I'm angry, that there's something that she's doing that's really pissing me off, but I'm scared to tell her about it. And if I push it even farther, I might find a heaviness in my chest or in my heart that's like a hurt or a sadness, a little boy sadness that's behind the anger. So I'm hurt and I'm angry and I'm scared to talk about it. And that then is going to tell me what is the best thing I can do, which is identify what it is that she's doing that hurt me so much, why it makes me so angry, and then go and talk to her about it.
That's pretty cool. Are these, is that little technique right there, was that in the No More Mr. Nice Guy book, or did you come across that somewhere else in your therapy work?
You mean, was it in Dr. Glover's book?
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's and it came out of my therapy work, and that's a thing that I want to point out about the book that I wrote. It's not just a workbook with a bunch of lines that go that match up with Dr. Glover's book. There's a lot of new information or different information that comes from me and my practice, and that it works alongside of Dr. Glover's book as opposed to simply being a companion workbook. And it combines both the stuff that Dr. Glover talks about, the hero's journey from Joseph Campbell, and my own work, and puts them all together into a program of psychological growth and change in journey form.
What is the importance of the hero's journey? You talk about Joseph Campbell. I've heard him talked about a few different times actually over the years in the podcast and different interviews and stuff I've done. Why is Joseph Campbell's work, the hero's journey, so profound and important, and especially for men?
It's important, I think especially for men. You know, he wrote this about myths and legends of the world, and most of them are about men, or else they're about women who act like men. So I do think that it's a male-oriented narrative, but it's one that it's really compelling, and it's the underlying story in so many of the world's myths and legends, fairy tales, religious narratives, societal epics, And all of them are based on the psychological growth of the human, particularly the man, coming from boy to man. It's a rite of passage. And it really kind of speaks in a very central way to who we are and how we grow. And I just think it is, it's easy and understandable. And it's also in movies we watch and books we read, so that you can pick up the narrative, identify yourself within the story, and it really helps carry you along as you're trying to grow and change. So that there is a kind of an intrinsic roadmap or an intrinsic path that you're going to walk, and the hero's journey can tell you where you are on the path.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting concept too. Of like, that's kind of how humans have told stories for. I mean, this isn't just a relatively new thing. This has been around, from what I understand, for like thousands and thousands of years. Like this whole hero's journey concept, like you mentioned, it's in fairy tales, it's in different novels, of course, many novels, many movies now, but also in many religions. Like it's deep rooted in so many different cultures across the world. And it's kind of interesting. Like that's how we've told stories on and on and on and on for, you know, eternity as human beings. But I think Campbell did a great job of kind of pointing that out and showing like, that's the sort of foundation for many of these great stories that we all know about. And like seeing now applying that to like a psychological aspect, it's like we can see where we are personally in our own journey, because that's how we can sort of relate to that story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And if you want two good examples for guys who aren't really familiar with it and don't want to read the book, by the way, that Campbell wrote is called, it's not called The Hero's Journey. It's called The Hero with a Thousand Faces. Mm-hmm. And a couple of real good examples to make things clear. One is a book by Robert Bly called Iron John, which is basically a long mythic tale and follows Campbell very, very closely. And the other is go watch the original Star Wars. It's like a perfect example of the hero's journey and how it works. You know, kind of every step along the way. It's just, it's just a terrific example.
The first three movies, you mean? Like those original ones?
No, just the first one.
Oh, the very first
one. The very first one all okay. By itself.
Gotcha.
So I guess in the chronology, it's number four, but it's the one that came back out in the 1970s.
76 or something, right? Late 70s.
Yeah, that's right.
I want to jump forward, touch a little bit more on some of these concepts in a moment, but I do want to mention, you did mention a couple things out of the exercise, because that first one that you mentioned was like really good. I think a lot of guys are going to appreciate that one. Is there one more that you can share with us though from the book? And by the way, the name of the book is No More Mr. Nice Guy, The Hero's Journey, A Step-by-Step Guide to Becoming an Integrated Male. Is there any other technique that you said there was like 13? Can you share one more from the book?
Well, there's not 13 techniques. There's 13 chapters, and each one has about four exercises, probably on the average, four exercises.
Wow. So we're talking like 50.
So there's 50 of them in there. Okay. And then I wrote an additional chapter, which comes free when you buy the book. There's a link to a page on my website where you can get an additional chapter with four more exercises about the process of change. So,
all right, so you're full of them.
There's a lot of stuff in there. if I could pick out one more, it would be something I call reanimating desire. And what that means is this. A lot of nice guys grow up in a world and a lot of people grow up in a family, a world where there is a parent who is either rageful, abusive, depressed, fragile. And because of that, that parent's wants and needs dominate the family dynamic. And everybody knows it. everybody's supposed to, you know, don't upset daddy because he'll start, you know, put his fist through the wall, or don't make mommy cry because she'll, you know, disappear into the bedroom and she won't come out for 3 days. And so everybody knows that you're not supposed to do this, right? So if some parents' needs are whatever and wants are what everybody's supposed to pay attention to, what happens when you have needs and wants of your own? Well, to the extent that they match up with your parents, fine, but what if they're in conflict? And what happens little by little in a family where there's this one dominant and fragile parent is that you discover that as a child, you need that parent, but you don't need your wants in the same kind of a way. And so little by little, you learn to keep your mouth shut and pay attention to what the parent wants. And then little by little, an automatic process takes place over time so that you not only are out of the habit of saying what you want, eventually you don't even know what it is. You cannot, if I ask a lot of nice guys, like, so what do you want for dinner, or what do you want, you know, now, or what do you want? They say, they look at, like, they sit on the couch, go, I want to be happy. And I say, what makes you happy? And they stare at me and they go, I don't know. And they're genuinely bewildered. Nobody's ever asked them what they want, and they haven't asked themselves. So when I ask them, they don't know what to say because they don't even know how to access it. So reanimating desire is about bringing back to life the process of getting in touch with what you want. And here's the exercise that I recommend for people for people to start with. So since anybody we're talking to has not starved to death, we know that they're capable of figuring out what they want to eat because even on their own, because they've been alone at some point in time and they figured out what they want to eat. But if I put them next to a girl that they're trying to date, they can't do it anymore because it's just like childhood. And so what they'll do is they'll turn to the girl and go, what do you want? What do you want for dinner tonight? Where do you want to go to dinner? And so what I have them do, what this exercise is the next time you it's time for dinner or it's time to pick a restaurant or it's time to go on a date, you are not allowed to ask the other person what she wants. You must go off by yourself and take a walk around the block, sit in your car, take a drive, lock yourself in the bedroom, your office, the bathroom, take a walk with the dog, whatever you have to do, and ask, and you are not allowed to come out until you can say where you want to go for dinner that night. And you can't fall into the trap of saying, well, I'd like this, but I know she doesn't like that. It doesn't make any difference. You have to ask yourself, what would I do if this was my last day on earth or if that woman didn't exist? Where do I want to go for dinner? And when you have decided what you want, then you can come out and say to the other person, you have to say to the other person, hey, honey, I'd love to go for Italian food tonight. And then shut up. You're not allowed to apologize for it, ask if it's okay, hem and haw, what do you think, honey? I'd like, baby, I'm jonesing for lasagna tonight. And see what happens next.
Nice.
That's the exercise.
Cool.
And then there's a follow-up, which is, well, what happens if she says okay? What happens if she doesn't say okay? And so on, you know, where do you go from there?
Have you guys been on EliteLifeNutrition.com lately? If not, make sure you check it out right now because we have all of our incredible products up there right now for you to order. Our incredible men's multivitamin, women's multivitamin, B-complex, turmeric curcumin, resveratrol, magnesium, zinc, calcium, NAC, ashwagandha, our incredible sleep formula, milk thistle, ginkgo biloba, lemon balm, glutamine, lithium orotate, tyrosine, all of our products are on our website right now, as well as our incredible featured bundles. The men's essentials bundle, women's essentials bundle, brain support, liver support, mineral support, immune system, elite antioxidant bundle. We've packaged so many of our incredible bundles together for you to check out. And right now, if you order over $75 worth of product, you get free shipping as well as the buy in bulk where you order two, you get 5% off, you order four or more, you get 10% off, you order 12 or more, and you get 15% off that individual product. There are so many different ways to save money at EliteLifeNutrition.com and so many ways to make sure you optimize your health and live an elite life. So make sure you go to EliteLifeNutrition.com right now and check out our incredible products. We have the best supplements in the world, and we want to share those with you today. EliteLifeNutrition.com. In your experience, how many times does a guy have to like do this exercise or something very similar to this in like different circumstances? How many times do they got to do this before it starts to like click in and start to make real changes in this guy's mindset?
Well, that depends on the guy, of course, and it depends on just how frightened he is. I find that older guys can do it a little faster than younger guys, even though older guys are in more of a habit. They use their minds differently. And so I think younger guys are still closer to the family dynamic and have a harder time figuring out other stuff. Mm-hmm. But for most people, you know, they can kind of get, at least with a restaurant, let's say, they can get it in a month. Mm-hmm. Because it starts out, you need an hour and then you need a half an hour and then you need 10 minutes. And finally you can say, hey, baby, how about sushi tonight? It takes some practice, but you can absolutely do it. And it shouldn't take that long. Like everything else, under stress, you're going to revert. You'll go back to, hey, baby, what do you want for dinner tonight? Okay, fine. That's, you know, the course of learning is not a straight line. It's a jagged line. It goes up. But it's not smooth.
Cool. That makes sense. You talk about as well, I believe in the book, self-acceptance as the basis for personality integration. What's that all about? Is it kind of similar to some of the things we've been talking about here?
Yeah, absolutely. Because let's think about those two exercises we just talked about. One is getting hold of body sensations and the emotions that are connected to it. The other one is reanimating your own desire. Well, the reason that you need to do this as an exercise is because you're not doing it now. And the reason you're not doing it now is because you grew up in a world in which your feelings, your desires, your likes and dislikes were unacceptable. And you learned that they were unacceptable to other people, so they became unacceptable to you. I learned that, you know, my wanting things made my mother angry. And this is true. When I was a kid, if I wanted something, my mother got angry at me. It almost didn't matter what it was. And so I learned to not want. So when I get hold of like, I want, I feel anxious or I did when I first did it, I felt ashamed and anxious. I felt, anxious that, you know, people weren't going to like the fact that I wanted, that I would be accused of selfishness, that I would be rejected as uncaring about other people. And then I felt ashamed that I had this unacceptable feeling, which was wanting. And so I had to learn to say, no, it's okay to want things. It's okay to want anything. And so I had to integrate, this is integration, I had to integrate wanting. By extension, I have to integrate everything that is human. So human beings are capable of greed and malice and hate and spite. Well, so am I. I have to integrate hatred and self-hatred, depression, excitement, joy, misery, sadness, anger, lust, confusion, stupidity, limitation. I have to accept all of those things about me in order to be okay with who I am. That doesn't mean I have to like them. And many of them are unchangeable. Some are changeable, but the basics are unchangeable. I can't be, I'm 5'4". I can't be the power forward of the Los Angeles Lakers. It isn't going to happen. And I believe me, I don't jump very high. And so it's just that simple. If I don't accept that, I'm just going to be miserable.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think it's a big problem. It's one of the key solutions for getting past a lot of mental health issues is accepting yourself wholly across the board. And, you know, like you said, the good and the bad, some things you, like you're 5'4", I'm 5'7". You know, it's not great to be a shorter guy in life, but what the hell are you going to do about it? Are you going to cry about it the rest of your life? Or are you going to just kind of move on and focus on some of the other areas and gifts and blessings and all the good things that you do have that, you know, many other people out there don't have? You know, you focus on your talents and the things you can improve. And, you know, you get past the things that you can't really work on. You can't fix height or some of the other things like, you know, characteristics and like how you look. But those things aren't as important either as well. And I want to go back to something you mentioned a moment ago, which kind of
can I throw in a thought before we move on?
Yep.
There's something about the idea of getting past that I'm not entirely a fan of, and so I want to throw out an alternative way of thinking about it, because a lot of guys can't get past certain things or they keep bugging them, and so I guess I just want to say that rather than getting past, acceptance means making a home for. I have to make a home for the fact that I'm 5'4" rather than getting past it. I have to make a home for the fact that sometimes I'm selfish and greedy. I have to accept the fact that sometimes I don't have enough information or I don't process things as well as I might. And so that's part of the integration. It isn't like pushing it away. It's welcoming it in and tying it up with everything else. That doesn't mean I'm going to let it stop me. And that's where I think you're talking about, and I agree with you. But I want to say it's about integrating everything.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think perhaps maybe I said it a little bit differently, but I actually agree 100% with what you're saying and accepting yourself completely. Like that's the key to all this is loving yourself fully. You're mm-hmm. going to have these things that, you know, traditionally most people wouldn't think are favorable or great, but at the end of the day, everything's a blessing. You know, the fact that you have life and you're breathing right now is a blessing, and you got to love every aspect of your life. And then, of course, like I like to say, focus on those blessings, those gifts that you have that many people don't have. Like, that's the key to success in a lot of areas is pushing in those good areas and things that you're good at.
Mm.
But going back to something you mentioned a moment ago, kind of reminded me of something, another issue, which is very similar, which is if you have this thing, say you're conditioning programming from your mother and you know your father, some people have it from their father, your parents, the sort of maladaptive traits and behaviors you develop over time. For you in particular, maybe you can answer it personally or just generally, but how did you get past and perhaps forgive your mother for doing those types of things to you and kind of, conditioning you in a bad way over time to think a certain way and to have these sort of negative characteristics as you got older, personality traits. How did you forgive her? How can people in general forgive their parents or some other type of figure that they grew up with that sort of gave them these negative traits?
So first off, I have to confess that I'm not a huge fan of the concept of forgiving your parents. And I guess I might be in the minority here, but I want to say that it's, if you can do it, great. But I don't believe it's required for psychological growth. Mm-hmm. And there are things that are, but forgiving your parents is not necessarily one of them. What I would say instead is to see how what they did to you as a child had a particular effect, and the way you would understand that now, or the effect that it would have now, has a different meaning. And that's the key to change. So let's say when I was a kid and my mother screamed at me, what that meant is I was an unlovable subhuman loser and I didn't deserve to be on the face of the earth. Well, I don't have to forgive her for that. But now if somebody gets mad and yells at me, that doesn't mean I look at it differently. It just means that I did something that pissed that person off and we can talk about it. It doesn't mean I'm an unlovable loser. That to me is the path to health. It's not about necessarily forgiving. And in particular, there's a lot of talk about forgiveness in the therapy world, but what I find is that it puts a lot of pressure on both the therapist and the patient to forgive. And if you're not forgiving, then there's something wrong with you. And that actually holds people back from growing. What are you supposed to do if, you know, you were incested by your father? Forgive him? Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe you don't want to forgive him. Do you give up on growth because you don't want to forgive your father? I don't think so. I think you start to look at how you can see it differently as a grown-up. But you're not required to do anything.
Okay, that makes sense. What about in cases where you want to have a relationship with that person? So obviously if they molested you or whatever, some crazy thing like that happened, and you don't want a relationship, then like forgiveness really shouldn't be, I mean, it could be an option, but it might not be your option. What about in cases where it's not as, say, as extreme as that, but you still wanted to have a relationship with this person? Would forgiveness be probably recommended in those cases?
What I would say is rather than setting out with a goal of forgiveness, I would set out with a goal of understanding. And I would say that it needs to be from both sides. So I would want to sit down with my parent and say, okay, look, here's some things. Here was my experience of what happened when I was a kid. I want to hear your experience. I know that you know, as my father or my mother, I know you tried your best to be the best parent you could. I didn't experience perfect parenting. Let's talk about what happened. And maybe we can arrive at an understanding. And ultimately, again, I don't think the goal ought to be forgiveness so much as acceptance. Mm-hmm. This is what I, the father or the mother, I did my best and I know I failed in certain areas. I, the child, I know you did your best, but I didn't always get what I wanted. And we can come to an understanding that it was good in some ways, it was less good in other ways, and we can accept what it was. If forgiveness is important, we can include that, and we can move on with a relationship together into the future.
Cool. That makes sense a lot. I actually like that take instead of forgiveness entirely, more of an acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about as well, and I want to wrap things up in just a moment, but I do want to touch on this last sort of big topic, which is overcoming fear of emotional darkness and looking deep into the core pain. What's this one all about?
Oh, well, I'll try to make it at least reasonably fast, because this is something I'm actually thinking about writing a whole book on. So
wow. Okay.
I can talk a long time about this one. But each of us, each of us has, at some point or the other in our lives, the experience of feeling like we are unloved in childhood. Whenever we want to be paid attention to, and our parents are too busy, or they're paying attention to our brother or sister or themselves, or fighting with whatever they're doing, they're not giving you what you want. And so if I don't get what I want, children do the same thing. They always blame themselves. If mommy is too busy, well, it's because I'm not lovable enough. If I were only more lovable, mommy would give me everything that I want, or daddy would pay attention more, or whatever it happens to be. And if that happens enough times, you can start to develop this kind of core, what I call a core depressive narrative, or a depressive core, that I'm unlovable or subhuman or a loser and unacceptable, and that there is a fundamental reason for that, inherent to who I am. I'm too stupid. I'm not good enough. I'm ugly. I'm toxic. I'm too loud. I'm too whatever I am. I am, and it makes me unlovable. And if that gets set, then over time, whenever I have that feeling of, or the experience of being unloved, I can drop into that dark place. And it really is a dark place. People literally have a vision of a black hole or a big dark cavern where they are alone and silent. It's like a living tomb. And that's where they get the place of loveless aloneness forever. And you feel despairing, you feel bleak, you feel empty, you feel like nothing can ever change, meaningless, pointless, hopeless. This is depression. And that's the darkness that everybody is trying to stay out of by working real hard, or by getting laid a lot, or by making a lot of money, or pursuing happiness, you know, frantically. We're all trying to stay out of that darkness, but it drives us all crazy, because it's driving us. And one of the keys to real change is to face the darkness. It's what I call my own personal hell. You gotta go to hell. The way to go through hell to get to the other side is you have to go into it and through it. You can't run from it. There's a quote that I use in the book. It's from Dante's Inferno. And the quote is, "The gates of hell open from the inside." You have to go in, face your darkness, integrate it. This is not, I push away depression, I push away anger, I push away sin. No, I accept it. I accept my darkness. I accept the depressive part of me. I can work on changing the narrative so that as an adult, I don't have to think I'm a worthless pile of shit just because I failed a test or turned a report in that the boss didn't like. But I have to accept that whatever happened to me in childhood happened, and that darkness is a part of me. So in Iron John, he talks about the road of ashes, and I think Campbell does too. It's the same idea. You have to go into the lowest place that you can go on an emotional level. It doesn't mean you got to quit your job and, you know, live in a tent. But it does mean that on an emotional level, you have to sit in the darkness and be able to sit in the darkness so that you don't have to run from it for the rest of your life.
What does that actually look like really quick? Is that like sitting in the darkness and thinking about your problems, or is it like doing all this work combined and that's kind of like a metaphor for it all?
No, it's more of the former. What I do with people is I'll do something like a guided meditation or a guided imagery journey. And so I'll have them lie down and breathe, and they'll talk about, oh yeah, you know, I feel this and I feel like a loser. And I'll say, well, it seems like you are in a very dark place. And then I will have them visualize that dark place. What does that look like? And when they can get there, let's say, for me personally, it was a large, dry cavern. It was reddish brown. There was nobody there. I was all alone. And next to the dry, sandy part was a lake. And I knew without tasting it that the water was salt water because it was made from tears that I had hidden and cried silently over the years. And I had to sit in that place and not run from it. And then as I sat in that visual place, I was filled with all of those feelings that I had been running from, like despair and shame and self-hatred. And little by little, I was able to accept them. I was able to feel ashamed without running from the shame. I was able to feel despair without running off to do something like take drugs or masturbate or go to work. So I was able to feel these feelings enough over time that they became part of me. The whole thing became part of me. And then little by little, whenever I went there, I knew that I would be able to get out of there. And I didn't have to do something kind of stupid or manic or compulsive to get safe.
Wow. That's a really powerful topic, man. That makes a lot of sense, too. And yeah, I love that. That's a good way to wrap things up, I think.
All right.
What's a final takeaway, send-off message in a place our listeners can check out the book and the website?
Well, the book's available on Amazon July 14th, 2020,
awesome.
And which is in 6 days. And it is available on ebook. It's going to be available on paperback. I'm not sure if that'll be ready on the 14th, but if not, it'll be ready shortly after. And I just got a contract for an audiobook on this one, and so it'll be available in all three streams. My website is www.drparisertherapy.com, and there's stuff on there, and there's some blog posts. And if you buy the book, there's a link on the resources page to a page in my website where you get some freebies. There's an additional chapter, and there's an hour-long conversation between Dr. Glover and me about No More Mr. Nice Guy and the hero's journey and my book and his ideas. And so there's a lot of stuff there. And what I'm hoping is that this will be a help to everybody out there who's listening, who wants to take that journey. And one last thing. We're not there yet, but an associate of mine, Mark Stein, and I are creating an online course with weekly groups that will be kind of nice guy heroes journey groups that guys can, you know, it's like the boat. You sign up for the trip and you climb in the boat and you head off into the into adventure. And this is going to be a psychological adventure, and you'll have a crew to do it with you. So nice. That's happening too. So
awesome, man. Sounds good. Guys, make sure you check out the book. It was such a fascinating conversation, man. It really was. I learned a lot myself today, and I can't wait to get the book myself now. Michael, thanks for coming on the show, man. Really do appreciate it. I know our guys are going to love this one, so take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Justin, thank you very much, and bye to all the guys out there. You take care.
As a reminder, join our newsletter at elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. There's a lot of crazy things going on, a lot of chaos happening in the world. The one thing I don't want you to miss out on is the incredible information that we provide here at Elite Man Podcast, on the videos, on everything else that we try to give you the best information on. Keep your family safe, keep yourself safe, keep everybody healthy, and don't miss out on any of this information. If somebody just randomly decides to take us down one day, you'll still get it if you're on the newsletter, elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do, and that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.